All right, hey, welcome back to Power Athlete Radio. This is Steve. I'm here with Denny, Luke from CrossFit Football and Power Athlete HQ, and John Wellborn, the man behind the scenes. Our first question is for Luke or John. It comes from DJ Rick on the CrossFit Football boards. He writes, "Hey guys, great work on the first show. After hearing about the heavy lift numbers such as 700-pound deadlift, 500-pound squat, etc., do you worry about things like specialization? And also, what about performance-enhancing agents? I assume there isn't a drug test involved in this competition, but with the right dollar amount up for grabs, do you worry that someone will do whatever it takes? Many of us supplement within reason, such as BCAAs, creatine, pre-workout formulas, etc. But where will you be able to draw the line, and what are your plans for dealing with such a possibility?"
Well, I'll tackle the specialization piece. I mean, that's really the whole point of this competition, is to see if people are willing to specialize and in a team atmosphere so that people can work together and put together a solid team and compete at this thing. The odds are the cash prize is going to be right. We're looking at least in excess of $1,000 per team per event. And we're going to take it from there. But in terms of the performance enhancing drug side of it, I know one of our sponsors is likely going to be Dr. Tom Inkledon, who's a personal friend of John's. And the dude, I mean, he's the leading researcher in blood work or something like that, isn't he, John?
Yeah, Dr. Tom Inkledon, for human performance specialist. Tom's one of the leading researchers for blood work with professional athletes. He has tested the majority of the NFL over the last decade, has worked with the NFL in terms of blood testing. And we're actually giving away some blood panels and some performance testing and, you know, minerals. And Tom's going to do a blood panel on the as a gift for winning the first and second spot at this deal. So we're probably going to tie the awarding of the prize money to the getting your blood work done. So if you get your blood work done, everything comes out great, then, you know, we're happy to give you the money. You get your free blood work and you get to, you know, work with one of the top experts in the world. If you don't submit, I don't know if we can give you the dough. And I guess we'll know if something comes back. I mean, Tom will also be there and he has a sixth sense about that stuff. So some dude looks like he's ready to come in and chew glass and rip 45-pound plates in half. He might just get the Inkledon sixth sense. So you know what? At the end of the day, this is my take on steroids and drugs. I never saw steroids make a bad player a good player. They just made a bad player a bigger bad player. They made a good player a bigger good player. I definitely think that, you know, performance enhancing drugs are very real and very prevalent. And if, you know, people want to take a bunch of drugs to win some local competition, to win a few thousand bucks, that's on them.
Well, you know, and on top of that, John, like that, it doesn't make them a better player. And that's what the rest of the competition is about outside of the total, is you need to be athletic and you need to know how to work with your team strategically. So it may give you a leg up on your deadlift, or it may give you a leg up on your squat. But in terms of the rest of the competition, I really don't think it's going to help to the degree that it would on a total.
Yeah, I think people are more scared about it than they need to be. At the end of the day, we're going to set this thing up to where if you come in and, all you do is, you know, just the core lifts and, you know, you take a bunch of drugs, I don't think you're going to make it out the other side of some of the other stuff. There's definitely some very real, and we're being pretty smart with how we put this together. So, I mean, if guys are worried about it, I'm not that worried about it, to tell the truth.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That's super cool. I wonder if you guys could just comment a little bit, because it sounds like one of the prizes is going to be this blood workup. And could you give us a little details about what somebody could expect from that blood workup?
Yeah, Tom Inkledon does some pretty cool stuff in terms of mineral testing and, you know, blood work and, you know, hormone testing, and is one of the top guys out there. So we're trying to finalize exactly what it's going to look like and the cost and how it's going to kind of all play out. Hopefully we can, you know, roll the consultation and be able to get this deal kind of put together and make it somewhat affordable, and we can afford it, and Tom can, you know, kind of donate it for our stuff. I mean, he's somebody that I personally have worked with for over the last decade. I met him early in my NFL career and used to go out and get all my blood work done and have a pretty good blood history of exactly, you know, what everything looks like. And what's kind of neat is I know exactly what my blood work looked like in response to different training styles, different nutritional styles. And that's been very, very exciting to really have a history and be able to like, hey, this is the way I was eating. This is what my training was like. And this is when my blood work was most optimal. And based upon that, you see a lot of that stuff kind of coming out in the Power Athlete, especially with our nutrition strategies and our supplement strategies and a lot of our training stuff. So, and then yesterday I actually met with a guy who's one of the top neurosurgeons in the country in terms of testing brains and testing brain impulses and really how the human brain works. And it was pretty fascinating. I sat with this guy last night and really went over what the athlete's brain looked like. And the guy has worked with a couple hundred professional athletes. And there's a very, very specific brain type and a very specific brain setup that is unique to professional athletes that play at a high level. And the other group that shares this same kind of brain makeup and almost this genetic kind of motor programming for the brain is elite special forces in the military. So that was pretty interesting that the guy was in working with the Pentagon, trying to work in terms of a screening process with special forces, and to the point now where different people have brought him on to actually test people and be like, does this person have the genetic makeup, the motor pulses, the wiring up in their brain to really be able to be an elite athlete, an elite performer?
Wow. That blows my mind. As a neuroscientist, that is absolutely so interesting to me.
So have you ever heard of Dr. Jin at the Brain Research Center out here in Newport?
Yeah, actually I have. Yes. Awesome.
So I met with Dr. Jin yesterday and went through all of his testing stuff. And what was interesting, when we did all the brain mapping, he showed me the way most normal people's brains work is that information comes in, the visual cortex lights up, and the information travels forward to make a decision-making process, and then it travels down the rest of the body. He said, actually, when you look at it, some of the top professional athletes, the back, the front, and the middle all light up at once, and information processing is like 30 milliseconds faster.
Wow. So you've got parallel processing and increased speed. So you've got reaction time, motor control, contractions, that sort of thing. That's fantastic.
So when he tested me and we started kind of talking about these things, and the thing which I've always said is one, every football game I played in, I never heard the crowd noise.
Huh.
And the minute the ball was snapped, everything moved in slow motion. So I never, like, the speed of the game was always, when I saw it on film, I was always like a little amazed, because in my head, when I saw it happen, everything looked like it was moving pretty slow, and it allowed me to react. And he actually, when he broke it up, he said, you know, your brain works by taking small, little, tiny snapshots, and then the eyes and the body and the mind melted together, and we think it's continuous. He said, what happens for people that process information faster, your snapshots actually are more distinct, which gives you the illusion of things moving slowly. And I mean, it was the only other time where I've ever seen anything like it was actually we did the Richard Petty experience and got to drive race cars. And the thing which was interesting is the faster I went, the slower it seemed like we were going. And when I got out of the car, the guy goes, hey, how was it? I was like, actually, when we were doing 180, 200 miles an hour, I felt like everything slowed down and things were much easier the faster we went. And the guy kind of looked at me and he goes, you ever, you know any race car drivers? And I was like, no. He goes, the only other people I ever heard say that were race car drivers.
Wow.
And talking to Dr. Jin and him analyzing my brain and really showing me what some of the top baseball players in the world, I mean, he's testing a bunch of the Dodgers and a bunch of guys. He showed me their brains. He goes, this is what the athlete's brain looked like. And then he goes, this is how the average person's brain works. And he goes, and fortunately, he goes, we can look and figure out, you know, that top level performance. He goes, obviously you need the body, you need the genetics, you need the certain, you know, physical attributes, but he goes, without this form of motor programming, he goes, it's very, very difficult to hit 100 mile an hour fastball or be able to play in the NFL or drive 200 miles an hour. People just don't have the ability to process information that fast. So pretty fascinating. I'll go back on Monday and talk a lot more in depth with him. The other one we talked a lot about was glucose load, at which rate the brain is burning glucose and how efficient the brain is. And the other thing he made a comment to me is he goes, you know, your brain's very efficient and it doesn't burn a lot of glucose and doesn't use a lot of energy, which is good because the brains that we see that are big glucose burners actually burn out and people end up with more metabolic derangement, more brain problems later in life. So actually a slower burning, more efficient brain is actually much better for longevity. So that was pretty exciting. And when we started talking about a lot of the diet stuff we do, which is, you know, this kind of this power athlete kind of primal diet, he's like, it really lends claim to that, that the people that we've seen that were big into, you know, carbohydrates and gluten and a lot of these processed foods, they have a form of a very high glucose load. And he showed me a brain that had a high glucose load. And he goes, either this guy has diabetes or he's an alcoholic from the amount of carbohydrates he's consuming. And I was like, well, are you telling me that this glucose load is the same for the sugar burners and the alcoholics? He goes, yes. He goes, very many times when we see this, it's either they're an alcoholic or they have some form of diabetes.
Yeah. Unbelievable. So, the neuroscience that's coming out on carbohydrate effects on the brain, and it's linked to things like dementia, Alzheimer, and just things like cognitive control or deficiencies in the classroom of people that, you know, your young kids in college that aren't diagnosed yet, is just absolutely amazing. Amazing.
Steve, he talked about the single most important thing, and this is going to kind of trail off into my 42 or 43 things that I wrote about yesterday where the guy was butthurt about my comment about live like a farmer, don't live like a bartender. The reason where that comes from is it's an old term, you know, that, you know, I think my grandmother or somebody told me, you know, it's best to, you know, keep farmer hours, not bartender or barman hours. And when I talked to Dr. Jin yesterday, I asked him if he would come on the Power Athlete podcast, because I actually told him about you, Steve, and he's excited to come on it. So we'll have to schedule that one. But super what dope. We talked about was sleep. And he said that the amount of everything from diabetes to brain trouble to hormone levels to everything he can relate back to the number one is not sleeping within your circadian rhythms. Mm-hmm. He said, if you do not sleep, which is in bed asleep, you know, no more computer, no more electricity deal, after 9 o'clock in bed by 10, that sleep from 10 to 2 is actually most vital for your circadian rhythm. And he actually said, he goes, I don't care what happens after 2 o'clock, from 10 to 2, that is your circadian rhythm that you need to sleep. And if you miss that circadian rhythm, your ability to regenerate your body, your hormone levels, your brain function, your ability to fight off sickness, illness, and disease goes up astronomically. And he has all this research. And I mean, his big deal for me was in bed by 10, 60 minutes of direct sunlight a day. And the big thing for me is constantly moving with my hands. So he's like, you know, if you can constantly be using your fingers to type, to, you know, silly putty, anything, to constantly be using your hands where you're, you know, obviously using all your digits and doing something of, you know, random. He actually related the two best ones to being pottery, like throwing on the wheel, and knitting being some of the best things to do for your hands. And then he also said chewing gum to keep your face active.
That's so fantastic. That's, the importance of sleep can't be spoken to lightly. I love this idea of 10 to 2.
Well, The other one too, and I know this testing back with Dr. Inklet on, cortisol and testosterone play in the same, you know, for the same position. And if you mess up your circadian rhythm and you mess up the way your cortisol flows because you're messing up your circadian rhythm, all of a sudden cortisol is going to start taking place when testosterone should be, you know, and so that's where it battles. That's why my comment about low testosterone levels kind of rings claim. And then the guy was pretty upset that I would somehow insult his job of being a bartender. And I'm like, dude, I was a bartender. I worked security for years. I kept night hours. I know exactly what it does. And I'm smart enough now at 36 to know I got to get my ass to sleep.
Right.
And you know, if that's your job, so be it. It's your job. But you know what? I'm not going to sit there and hold your hand and say, you know what? Like, it's okay, because I know it's not okay. Just like I know that, you know, going down and eating a bunch of, you know, bagels and gluten and then drinking a massive fruit juice smoothie isn't good for me. And you know what? I got the brain information to prove that it's not good for me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. All right, we could talk all day, John. Let's shift gears. I think Denny has a question for you.
Lay it on me.
Hey, man. First of all, how you doing? It's been a while since I got a chance to talk to you.
Yeah, for
sure.
Last
time I spoke to you was in Occupy Strength in Chicago.
Yep.
During that conversation you and I had, you told me that you were in the process of writing a book.
Mm-hmm.
And I was curious if you could talk a little bit about that. And kind of where you're at with that.
Yeah, I mean, we launched the site in 2009, and unfortunately, we started putting up workouts. And, you know, we didn't really talk a lot about the method. We didn't really establish a lot of it. And the reason I kind of did that a little bit is, one, we were trying to work this kind of sea monkey experiment. And I had a lot of things that I knew to be true. But what's been great with the CrossFit Football site is, I mean, we get anywhere from 14,000 to 24,000 hits a day in 300 countries, which is a pretty cool way to fast forward your research and really find a way to create, you know, really meet our goals, which is to create bigger, stronger, faster athletes. And I believe we found it. I believe by training people to their level of adaptation, we have found a way to really cut out a lot of the silly nonsense bullshit and get people to where they want to go. Like, you want to get stronger, you want to get faster. We are going to cut away, and you're not going to have to waste your time with all this bullshit over here and all this smokescreen. And you know what? Like, we know that you bring in an unadapted, untrained, very fresh central nervous system. We know a linear progression can get those guys as strong as they can. And then at some point it's going to stop. And then we're going to have to go in two directions, which is efficiency of the central nervous system or increasing the cross-sectional size of the muscle. Well, what we found is a very cool way to do both of them. So by using a mix.
No one questions that we found the way by John Wellborn called CrossFit Football.
I'm not questioning it, but I'm just saying yes.
When's the book coming out? Tell them when the book comes out.
I think people get confused on that linear progression as well, because you always see them kind of say they're on it for a year and then they'll go to collegiate and then they're like, oh, you know what? I'm not making the gains anymore. I'm going to go back on linear.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Don't go down this rat hole. They're totally way off base.
Yeah,
John,
totally.
Don't go down the rat hole. Don't do it, because I know you have a ton of stuff primed in the pump to push out people going way too long on linear progression and the adverse effects of their training. So save that sucker, okay? But yeah, in terms of the book.
We have a book that I've been working on. What really kind of derailed the book a little bit was the birth of my twin girls. So but I have it in chapters, and I've been working on it. And then I've been actually working on this nutrition piece, this book with a publisher, which is going to be a combination of our kind of Serbs One cookbook / nutrition book. And, you know, you can hear a little bit about the nutrition stuff we did with AJ Roberts, with the talk I did at the Ancestral Health Symposium. And I got an article coming out for Mark Bell and his Power Mag about fats versus saturated fats versus monosaturated fats, and some of the research that Tom Inkledon was able to do, and I was able to really figure out kind of what the fat profile needs to look like. And just, it's really this book, and it's called The Power Athlete, and it's how we create bigger, stronger athletes, what the program looks like, how you follow the program, what the method looks like, how the movements are taught, the change of direction, why we teach what we teach at the seminars, the different planes of motion that athletes need to move their feet. I mean, and at the end of the day, all of these skills that we develop and all of these, this crucible that we call, where we, you know, we put it in and we, you know, trial by fire, has to be tested in competition. And, you know, without some end goal, without some competition, the training's just working out. Training means I'm training for a goal. I'm doing this training, so I'm going to go out and I'm going to have success in this place. And if you don't have some proving ground for it, it's just getting sweaty. And that's what the book's about.
That's awesome.
It, on a side note, I hope you're going to go with a good publisher, because I read Louis Simmons' book, and I'm not trying to bash Louis Simmons or that whole method. It's awesome. I can read his articles all day, but the West Side Book of Methods has got to be the worst put together book I have ever read in my life. I mean, you could tell it's just a series of his articles, and it's really repetitive, and it kind of distracted me from all like the knowledge he's trying to put out there.
Yeah, the only way you're really going to understand the West Side Method, I mean, you can read the book and kind of, you know, understand the, you know, the max effort versus dynamic and the assistance work and, you know, the fact that you have the 3-week waves and you have to rotate the between the squat, the deadlift, and the good mornings and this kind of whole deal. But that's good from the 10,000 foot view. To really understand it, you got to go hang out with Louis. You got to go to Westside Barbell and like we did and have, you know, basically I think we had three meals a day for 17 days with Louis. Finally, after, you know, going to Bob Evans and, you know, Outback Steakhouse and, you know, Applebee's and all these, I mean, like breakfast, lunch and dinner with Louis for almost 2.5 weeks. Finally, by the end of that, I really understood the Westside program and what Louis was trying to do. And what was interesting too, to train in the groups and to see what he's testing and how he's doing it and where his guys are. And, you know, you have different guys that are going for different contests and this guy's doing this and everybody's kind of in there, even though they're training in their same groups, everybody's doing something slightly different. And I think it's just Louis's black box. It's Louis's, you know, it's his lab. And, you know, he might as well be walking around with a lab coat because, you know, for what they do, he's made some extremely, extremely strong lifters.
Yeah, there's no question there. John, we don't have much more time, but I do want to ask you one question that popped up on the board
today.
Wait a minute.
How long is this thing? I thought we had a couple hours.
We've been trying to keep them to about a half an hour to keep, you know, the maybe the Power Athlete Nation doesn't have the biggest attention span.
Okay.
plus, we don't want to encourage people sitting behind a desk, right, listening to it. So maybe in a few minutes here, we'll wrap up. But today on the CFFB board, comment number 24 by a guy named Rob Wilson, and I had this question as well. What's the deal with the squat clusters being at 95%? What's the rationale behind that? I mean, I just got done them, and that is a crushing workout.
Yeah, it is. It's a completely crushing workout. The whole idea about it is, like, realistically, it's somewhere around what I was really shooting for was somewhere around 12 reps. When we originally did this workout, I just basically did a cluster of four singles, and I did it three times and I rested. And what it was able to really get me to do was I was able to really drive the amount of volume that I was able to do and the amount of time that I wanted. And this stuff actually comes out of some of Berkashansky's work about how to build some myofibular hypertrophy and some real dense hypertrophy using reps that we would usually categorize in the CNS. But by effectively doing his rest pause, you can kind of hit kind of a higher hypertrophy number. So it's just a kind of a different tweak. And we're running it for 3 weeks. And what I'm kind of fully expecting is that everybody PRs their one arm box jump beforehand. They're going to do these clusters. We're going to kind of take a couple days off and they're going to go easy on Monday. And then we're going to come back and we're going to squat and see what people can do on some lifts on Thursday. And we're going to see if we were effectively able to not only drive that CNS, but also add a little bit of strength and a little more wiring up. At the end of the day, the harder part with a lot of this programming stuff is how do you program for 20,000 people you don't know? So it's funny, but people are like, what's up with this? And I'm like, well, dude, I don't know you. I mean, if you were in the gym every single day with us, and you can ask Luke this, we would be able to assess things. We'd be able to figure out what's wrong with your technique, what's your limiting factor, what you're doing, and really design some programming that is specific to you. But when you're putting out general program for 20,000 people, I have to put a rep range because you might have a guy who comes in at 95%. He's able to get a triple at 95%. Now, does that mean that he's stronger than everybody? No, it just means that his 1RM is not a true 1RM.
Right.
Yeah, that's Ben would crush this workout.
Yeah, Ben Oliver, who trains with us, Ben is very, very good. Usually women and, you know, endurance athletes. Like
did you just compare Ben to a woman?
No, what we're saying is usually with women athletes, they're able to lift a higher percentage of their 1RM for more reps. Guys that do more endurance type training, similar to like Ben was a soccer player, so he did long duration type movements. What we know is to effectively be good at something like a CrossFit or more a middle endurance type deal, you have to have the conversion of fast twitch fibers to slow twitch fibers to be able to survive it. If you're all fast twitch fiber, you'll never be able to do any duration. So what we found is that guys and women do not have the efficient central nervous system that men do. And the reason being is it's testosterone. You know, testosterone is made in the testes, 90% of it. The other 10% is made in the adrenals. So women are just naturally not going to have the same testosterone levels as men. But we also know that lactic acid threshold training builds a big growth hormone response, especially in female athletes. So, I mean, we have a twofold. So when I design the reps, if this workout is my workout, it's going to be three sets of four, four singles. 5 minutes rest in between, but I had to put the reps up a little bit higher because I realized that not everybody's wired up like me, that there might be somebody wired up like Ben. And so I had to give a range.
Yeah. And that made sense. That's how it was for me. The first time we did it, I went for twos on the 90, got pinned by myself in my garage at 95. And then today I realized I had to do singles, had to do four. Yeah. Yeah. So,
But I guarantee there's a guy out there who does on his first set of 95 gets a triple and then does two more. And then the next set does a double and then the last one gets a single. And then he's looking at it being like, well, wait a minute. Why did I get a triple on my 95 when all these other guys got singles? And, you know, I mean, we're also assuming that, and this is the hard part, because I have this deal, which I call cafeteria CrossFitters, which are people that are literally all these programs are out there and they're walking down the line and they're picking and choosing certain pieces instead of going to a restaurant, sitting at a meal for 6 months. And this is all I'm going to eat. Right. So with this cafeteria CrossFit kind of mentality where, oh, hey, this looks good. I'm going to do squat cluster today from CrossFit football and tomorrow I'm going to do something else. You know, and you have people jump in there and I guarantee the guy asking the question has never, you've never seen his name on the message boards. Mm. And if he did, if he had consistently been doing it, he'd been following the program for 6 months, the workout would have made total sense to him. But the guy all of a sudden jumps in. He's like, what's up with this? Why would you guys do this? This doesn't make sense. Well, yeah, it makes sense if you've been doing it for the last 2 weeks, or better yet, you've been following it for the last 6 months and you would have seen the cycle and the progression. You know, the amateur repeats every week. The collegian really repeats every 3 weeks and the professional really repeats every 6 weeks. But the way that I cycle the program, most people have no idea what's going on. But what we've effectively done is I've been, you know, kind of the deal where I put my arm around you and I'm like, don't worry about it. Let me do this. All you have to do is plug and play. And if you do what I ask, you will meet your goals. You don't have to think. Stop thinking and stop trying to secret squirrel. Just follow the program. If your goal is to become a bigger, stronger, more efficient, more explosive athlete, I think we have a pretty good template for that. Now, if your goal is to go run 100 miles or win the CrossFit game, you are going to need a different style of programming because that's not my goal. I'm not trying to win. I'm not trying to help you beat Rich Froning. I'm not trying to help you, you know, beat some guy to run 100 miles. I'm looking at creating just a bigger, stronger athlete that's big in that ATP tapping into that glycolytic pathway.
John, today on the board, there was some discussion that came about from your Talk to Me Johnny article where one of the items was eat protein that had a face or a soul. I completely agree. But the board, there was some discussion about people eating pea protein, hemp protein. I don't think anybody admitted to eating soy protein because I think they would have got punched in the dick, right? But how do you feel about plant-based proteins versus things like whey protein versus, you know, just cutting up an animal and eating it?
I always go back to just cutting up the animal and eating it. I don't I have not seen a plant-based protein that has the same amino makeup or has the same metabolic and anabolic effect of a plant-based protein. We are designed to eat animal-based proteins, and the only proteins I count as real proteins, I call those faux proteins, fake proteins, are ones with faces and soul and a mom. If you can't run it down, if you can't go pet it and find it somewhere, I just don't count it as a real protein. And I'm sorry. I mean, I know that 42 or 43 things that I learned came off pretty harsh. And for people that know me, they know I have a good sense of humor and they know that I fuck around a lot. But they also know that I would never say I'm opinionated, but I have formed a set of ideals that I believe. And I think people should cook. I think you should survive on animal-based proteins. I mean, I just went to a guy the other day who wanted to talk to me about the China study, and he didn't think that any more than 10% of your total caloric intake should come from plant or animal-based proteins. And, dude, we debated. I said, I completely disagree. And, I'd love to get his blood work. I mean, I've seen the effects on my blood work when I've eaten a higher protein diet to the point where actually what's pretty neat is I just got word from Dr. Inklon on the other day that they have a genetic test to tell whether or not you are adapted to eat a higher fat diet opposed from a lower fat diet. Gosh, so now they have a genetic test to know that if you should eat like a primal paleo diet versus probably maybe of a more of a vegetarian, like more vegetables type deal, maybe a lower amount of saturated fat from plant-based stuff. So personally, I know based on my blood work, I don't need to get that genetic test, but not to say that somebody doesn't. And maybe it's short-sighted on my point. And maybe when we get more genetic testing, we'll know and we'll be able to actually be able to key people's diet specific to what their genetic adaptation is. But at the end of the day, if we're talking about training bigger, stronger, more powerful, more explosive athletes, all the pea protein and hemp protein and soy protein in the world isn't going to create the same effect of a plant-based protein in terms of testosterone levels, muscle mass. I mean, flesh builds flesh. When you start looking at those amino profiles, it just doesn't add up.
Flesh builds flesh. I love it. Awesome. Well, I think that's all the time we have, guys. John, Luke, I appreciate your time as always. Denny, do you have any closing words?
Just keep those submissions coming in through the Power Athlete Headquarters contact spot and let us know what you want us to talk about. Buy CrossFit football apparel, buy Evolve food stuff. Keep lifting hard.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
See you guys. See you.